Think Again with Borderlands Cooperative.
Join us for critical conversations about things that matter.
Every Friday at 10 a.m. on 3CR Community Radio, 855 AM on your dial.
And 3CR Digital, streaming live at 3cr.org.au.
So together, let's think again about important matters affecting us, like economics,
politics,
education,
health,
climate,
and what we can do about it all.
Welcome to our 302nd program of Think Again, broadcasting from the 3CR studio on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. Think Again is a program of Borderlands Cooperative, an organisation working for social change for 28 years. I'm Jennifer Burrell, your host today, while Jacques has a week off. Today I'm pleased to have on the program Tamar Hopkins from the Racial Profiling Data Monitoring Project. Welcome to the program, Tamar.
Thank you so much, Jennifer. It's great to be here.
Oh, fabulous. So to start with, Tamar, could you tell us a bit about the Racial Profiling Data Monitoring Project, and what's your role with the project?
Yeah, sure. So the Racial Profiling Data Monitoring Project is a project of the Centre Against Racial Profiling. That was a centre that was set up last year by Ilo Diaz and myself. And this is one of the centre's many projects. So the Racial Profiling Data Monitoring Project has actually a very long history of work behind it. So I have been FOIing police data since 2018. So it has a combination of data from 2018, 2019, 2022, 2023, and we have just a week ago dropped the 2024 data. And so that's what the recent media reporting has been about is the analysis of the 2024 data. And the purpose behind the project is to analyse Victoria Police data to track systemic patterns of racism. And so this is arising from the absence of it being tracked by any official body. So we have in 2015 a commitment by the police to a zero-tolerance policy to ban racial profiling. And in 2023, there was an apology and a commitment by the Chief Commissioner to prevent systemic racism. And yet there's been no official body put in place to monitor those promises to the community that the police will end racial profiling and systemic racism. So really, this is the project that is set up to track the police compliance of these policies. And my specific role in it is really the lead researcher in obtaining the data and analysing that data and making that data public so that the public has access to the raw data and a transparent analysis of that data.
And I'm sure a lot of activists and advocates would be interested in having access to that data as well, including a lot of 3CR listeners. So we'll definitely put a connection to that on our program page today. Yep. So you keep this data up to date on the website. So I guess it'd be good to talk about what you've recently analysed in the racial profiling data for 2024, but maybe start with what is it actually like? It's to do with Victorian police, and what does it mean to, what does racial profiling mean? And then if you could just talk about some of the main findings from the 2024 data, that would be great.
Yeah, sure. So, racial profiling is about the excessive and unnecessary targeting of particular communities for law enforcement interest, and also it generates the over-policing, causes harassment and, constant police contact by police with individual communities. So it's seen in a whole lot of ways, but what we're looking at is actually the police contact with the communities on the streets and how that kind of plays out and how it may be impacting the the over-representation of particular groups within the prison system. So it's really looking at that very initial contact between the police and the public and seeing, can we see any evidence that that contact is unnecessary and disproportionate towards particular groups. So, that's the thing that we're looking at.
Yeah, so it's to do with certain racialised groups being picked on, or being picked on if you're perceived to be from that background. And as you say, the data's also looking at, for example, if the researchers, was that justified or not?
Yes, absolutely, yeah. So it's got that double-pronged approach to look to, is it disproportionate and is it unjustified?
Mm.
So that's the difference between racial profiling and the concept of systemic racism. So systemic racism just looks at the disproportionate focus of police on particular communities. To actually call something racial profiling, we need to show that it's not just disproportionate, but it's unnecessary. So that requires some careful thinking about the data and how do we know from this data that it's unnecessary? And so there's a whole lot of different methodologies that researchers have kind of compiled together to try and look at whether something is in fact racial profiling. And the methodologies that we're using in this particular project are looking at hit rate analysis of the data and also having a look at, is it disproportionate in proportion to the population size in the census? So can we see that it's just it's considerably greater than you would expect given the size of a particular population in the census? So we're using these two different strategies, which together can tell us information about both racial profiling and systemic racism.
Mm, and what are some of the standouts from the 2024 data that you've just analysed?
Yeah, so what we can see really clearly is that overall the police are, when they are searching particular groups, they're less likely to find items, reportable items on them. So reportable items would be contraband items. So the police are searching, that the searches that we've looked at are searches under the Control of Weapons Act, where reasonable grounds is required, under the Graffiti Act, also requiring reasonable grounds, Firearms Act, requiring reasonable grounds, and also the Drugs Act. So we're looking at, do the police find an object that is contraband under those particular provisions? Mm. And what the data is showing is that when they search a person that they perceive to be African, Middle Eastern, Indian and Asian, they are less likely to find contraband items on those people than white people.
So less justifiable, I guess, in my lay language, yep. Less justifiable grounds. And I noticed, so you're looking at search rates, to start with search rates. So I'm just looking at some of the points. In 2024, Aboriginal people were 15 times more likely to be searched by Victoria Police than white people. People perceived to be African were about 9 times more likely to be searched than white people. People perceived as Middle Eastern, 5 times more likely. And also Pacific Islander people were 5 times more likely. And from what you were just, the point you were just making then was, then you look at, I guess the police might make an argument, oh yes, but there's more going on there, that's why we have to search them more. But actually that isn't backed up, that when they search them, they're less likely to find some justification for the search.
Absolutely. So what overall the data is finding, that for all communities, when the police search them, less than 1 in 4 of those searches are producing a hit. So it's where the vast majority of the searches that the police are conducting are not actually finding anything. And so therefore, there are questions about all the searches that the police are conducting, whether or not the reasonable grounds threshold is really adequately being met for all communities. And yet what we're seeing is that particular communities are, 15 times more likely to be searched. So First Nations communities, the hit rate data is showing that police are just fractionally more likely to find an item, a prohibited item, on them than a white person, but that they're 15 times more likely to search them than a white person. So it's the policing action that is absolutely swamping the effects, and is generating the over policing of these groups. It cannot be justified by the relative chance of these communities having contraband items on them. So having these two data parallel to each other, being able to look at hit rate data alongside this disproportionality data, really shows very clearly that it is the policing of these communities that is the problem.
It's devastating, really, and
it is.
It must be, and I just can't imagine what it would be like to be a member of one of these communities. Because as a white woman, middle class woman, this has never happened to me. And I would be outraged if the police came up to me in the street and said, "We want to do a search of you." I would be going, "Oh my gosh, why?" And I would be really angry and upset. And also, I guess a white woman, educated, middle class, I would make such a stink. And I'm probably more likely to be listened to or have more of a voice too than being a member of a group that's so racialised. And I'm just looking at, you know, in the 2024 data, use of force rates, it's just terrible. Victoria police were 10 times more likely to use force against a person they perceived to be Aboriginal than a person they perceived to be white. 10.6 more times to use force against a woman they perceive to be Aboriginal. So there's no protection of being a woman in any of this. And 13 times more likely to use tasers against Aboriginal people. Tasers, that's extreme violence, using a taser. And then I see another one. Victoria Police in 2024 were 23.7 times more likely to initiate a police pursuit against someone they perceive to be African. So imagine being a member of one of these communities, which I believe is what led to that legal action being taken years back that police responded to and promised to do better in the future.
That's right. These statistics show very starkly that the types of policing that you will receive is dependent on your racial appearance, and that white people are simply not experiencing the types of policing that racialised communities are experiencing on a routine basis. Mm-hmm. So this data really shows just how bifurcated the experiences that the community is having by the police. This is such a racialised experience. And so you're absolutely right that it's, you know, white people are still the dominant majority of Victorians. And so overwhelmingly, the majority of Victorians are simply not experiencing the types of policing that minority communities are having. This is an experience that racialized communities are having. So, yeah, this data paints this very, very clear picture. And I think, you know, it starts to make visible the horrific experience that so many members of our community are experiencing, that they're simply not seen by the majority. Yes. So, yeah, I mean, it's shocking. It's deeply disturbing shocking.
It is deeply disturbing. I just want to remind our listeners, you're listening to Think Again, 3CR 855 AM on your dial, 3CR digital and streaming live at 3cr.org.au. I'm Jennifer Burrell, and today we're joined by Tamar Hopkins from the Racial Profiling Data Monitoring Project. And Tamar's been giving us an update from the 2024 racial profiling data, which shows very clear and extreme targeting by Victorian police of certain racialised groups, and showing that they're much more likely to be searched without reasonable grounds than white people and have force used against them as well. So, and these targeted groups include people perceived by the police to be Aboriginal, African, Asian, Indian, Middle Eastern or Mediterranean, and Pacific Islander. So It's a shocking situation for the people at the receiving end of this, and the groups being routinely targeted in this way. So Tamar, what do you see as some of the implications of this racial profiling, especially in the context of past promises for improvement?
Yeah, I think what we can see is that the rhetoric that happens at the highest levels of police are not being matched by what is happening operationally down at the street level. And so, you know, we get these promising changes to the Victoria Police Manual that purport to ban racial profiling, and yet what we're not seeing any of that flowing out into what's happening. And I mean, what was interesting about the Yuruk Commission statements that the Chief Commissioner made in 2023 was that he was really promising to stamp out the differences that we're seeing in this data, saying, you know, the discretional use of police powers. He didn't want to see that being used in a systemically racist way. And yet we're seeing so clearly that this kind of systemic disproportionate use of police powers is impacting the very community. And in that case, he was directed to First Nations communities, but we're seeing it happen more broadly to a range of communities. So what we're seeing is that these statements, these wonderful statements that bring us all to tears that finally someone is doing something about it, actually is not at all translating into practice outcomes for the community. And it's kind of, it tells us that these things are PR exercises that are done to quell the uprising. So we see that, you know, the huge level of, you know, that group of young African people bringing that claim, the Hail Michael claim, that was an extraordinary exercise for those young people in actually putting the topic of racial profiling on the table in Victoria in such a severe way, to the point where Victoria Police recognised it had to do something about it. But what it recognised it had was a perception problem of racial profiling. It accepted that it needed to shift the dialogue so it did some tinkering around some changes in the police manual without actually ensuring that led to on the ground changes to policing. And again, with the Europe process, what an incredible process that the whole community has gone through with Europe, the effort that came together to get that tribunal to sit, that commission to sit and hear all this evidence and really look at what was going on, led to, you know, the Chief Commissioner having to make this incredible statement to the community. And yet, once again, we're seeing that this was just a mere public relations exercise and it hasn't translated to on-the-ground operational changes to police. So I think, you know, that is very disturbing to recognise that work that is done to make change isn't actually creating change in Victoria Police. It's just generating these statements of intent.
It's disgraceful. And in all this, what we can't forget is there are real people at the receiving end of this. And I noticed there was a report that came out by the Inner Melbourne Community Legal, 12 years on, evaluating Victoria Police's response to the Hail Michael settlement, which you highlighted, pointed out to me. And it's just worth reading the stories at the end of that report just to see the effect it has on people. How would you feel every time you walk, few times you walk down the street, police pull you up? Or they search you in front of other people or want to search your car? And the thing is, a lot of these people are young people too. It takes a lot of self-discipline for them not to get angry, because once they get angry, then they're especially vulnerable.
Absolutely.
What needs to happen, Tamar, to put a stop to racial profiling by the Victorian Police once and for all?
Well, so the report that you just referred to actually makes some very important recommendations that come from the community about what needs to be done. And there's three kind of main focuses that report concludes. One is about reducing the contact between Victoria Police and the public, that we really need to do a whole lot of work to actually pull police out of spaces that they are not needed. And I mean, this is there are so many ways that we can do things better, providing support to communities and schools and families before there's any kind of criminal justice issue, and that communities are crying out for more support and on the ground, care and work with individuals that don't require policing responses. And we've had lots of shifts in that direction. So, for example, the decriminalisation of public drunkenness has meant that we now have co-health operating to go out and support people who are having issues on the streets. And that's using non-policing responses. And that's exactly the direction that we need to be heading in a whole range of different areas. So we know that the Mental Health Royal Commission in Victoria recommended, against having an only police response to people with mental health concerns. And actually, what about using communities to support people who have mental health issues as first responders? And, I mean, there's all sorts of work that's showing that actually, with family violence, even police are not the first responses. In the vast majority of cases, it's the community that's responding. Mm. Only a few cases get through to the police. So really, we've already got an alternative response going on to family violence that is very defunded and needs much more funding. And yet the government keeps pouring money into the police response, when actually it's alternatives that are so desperately needing support from the government. So, I mean, really, I think that's a critical thing, is why are we seeing the police as being the response to what the community needs? Can we not build up the community to support individuals and protect them and create real safety? So that's the first suggestion from the report and the community that was interviewed as part of that report. The second one is, if we do have police, we need far better. We have to restrict what they do, so that they need to be held to account far more than they are currently. So we have all of these policies and procedures that the police have, but no mechanism to kind of ensure that they are actually complying with those policies. So we need kind of far better monitoring systems and accountability system. So, I mean, we've been calling for that for years and that hasn't eventuated. So I do hold that with a bit of suspicion that, is the government, we're seeing the government right now rolling out far greater police powers with no additional accountability. How serious is our government really about holding the police to account? We don't see any evidence of that, unfortunately. We've had bipartisan committees coming together to make recommendations to improve police accountability, none of which has been adopted. So I don't hold high hopes for that strategy to actually, be implemented. I mean, the only difference we may have now is that we have, with the treaty in place, there could be some pressure from the first People's Assembly to kind of actually force some real accountability. So there is a little bit of difference as a result of the treaty in place that we could see going forward some differences. But yeah, we are yet to see the impact of that.
So that's a hopeful avenue at least. And I do note that your work pulling this data together is voluntary, and it's a fantastic and much needed public service. So yes, the government should be resourcing this, and the police should be doing this monitoring, and the data should be made public, certainly. So we're fast coming to the end of the program, and I think we could talk for an hour on this really, but is there anything listeners can do?
Yeah, so I really encourage people to have a look at the Racial Profiling Data Monitoring Project. We have at the end a take action button that you can sign on to support the monitoring of police data and also the independent investigation of police data. But there's also kind of movements afoot around exploring alternative first responders, and I kind of recommend people getting involved in that. If they want to support the project, it's an unfunded project. It's costing us thousands of dollars to get the data, and you can if you donate to the project, that would be fantastic. But
that's great. We'll put that link on our program page for sure.
Lovely.
So thanks so much for joining us on the program today, Tamar Hopkins from the Racial profiling data monitoring project, and for your unpaid work and the work of your project and all the people working on your project gathering and analysing these police racial profiling stats, and really, as I said before, providing a vital public service. It's been very informative today and should really galvanise some much needed action, I think.
Thanks so much for having me, Jennifer.
A real pleasure. So moving on to our community announcements, if you're wanting some ideas and motivation for creating social change, I think it's really worth tuning in to this morning's episode of Alternative Radio on 3CR. Sorry about that. That was with Nardine Smith, and also Greenleaf Radio this morning was quite inspirational, I thought, talking about rising tide and other actions. So if you're needing a bit of motivation and inspiration and hope, there's some good avenues. But to support people in Palestine, there is a rally at the State Library in Melbourne on Sunday, 7th of December, State Library, 12 o'clock. But for ongoing actions, go to APAN, APAN, or Free Palestine websites. Thanks to our listeners for tuning in to Think Again Live on 3CR Community Radio today. If you want to contact us or give us feedback or ideas, please email Borderlands. The email address is borders@borderlands.org.au. Alternatively, you can ring Borderlands on 0466 123 766. Our programs are available by podcast on a variety of platforms and on the 3CR website at 3cr.org.au. And to end our program for today, please enjoy Milk Humana by King Stan.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.